Okay, our final presenter is Patrick Burnett, and Patrick is an assistant professor at the Florida Atlantic University. He researches public health finance with particular focus on funding formula design and exploring the relationships between expenditures and outcomes. Please welcome Patrick Burnett.
Thank you. Move this set up first. There we go. I'm here to talk today about evaluating funding formulas. I'm working with a few other people. I'm working with Jim Bueller and Lydia Ogden at Emory University and David Holgrave at Johns Hopkins. I do want to say that the research is being funded by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and through their, more specifically, through their HICFO initiative. Nobody is supporting this research, but if anybody does feel like bribing me with something like Philly season tickets or something like that, I am open to negotiation. Funding formulas are used for a lot of different things at the federal level, things like bioterrorism money, HRSA money, MCH money, things like that. Not many people have looked at it. Some people have looked a little bit at how the Ryan White money goes out, but not a lot of people have looked at it much beyond that. What we're trying to do with our project is look at the relationship between how the formulas work and different measures. First of all, measures of service need. What's the population there? What are the risk factor prevalences? What are the incidence and prevalence rates? Also look at the relationship between the funding formula allocations and resource requirements, things like local costs, how much does a nurse cost in a given area, and so things like that. Lastly, we're looking at the relationship with program performance in terms of outcomes. Is money going towards areas performing less well or better or something like that? Ultimately, our goal is to provide an objective policy analysis tool with which to look at how money is going out or how money is proposed to go out and maybe to try and influence where it might be better spent. First, although the bioterrorism allocation, if you read the language on how it goes out, it's not nearly this simple to read, but basically it plays out like this. About $4 million for FY2006, right there, about $4 million goes out per state. There's a little bit of money given out for the three large cities, and then it goes to about $1.50 per person. So basically, it's $4 million per state and $1.50 per person in each state. Now, what I do, or what we do, is we take this money, we divide it up a few different ways. One of the things we do is, first of all, we look at the current allocations. Second is, we'll take that money and we'll redivide it as if we spent every money on a straight per capita basis. Another thing we'll do is we'll take it and we'll give it out based on a straight per person in poverty basis. Now, what this does is if you have no poor people, unfortunately, you get more money. But what we're doing is we're testing, and we're certainly not advocating that this is the best way to do it, but what we're saying is if we're using this as an extreme and saying if we divided all the money based on people in poverty, we can see which states are going to be winners and losers, and we'll see in a minute that we've got a bunch of ways to evaluate that. So what we're doing is let's say they added a poverty component to bioterrorism. Right now it's just based on the flat 4 million and a per capita. Let's say they said let's start adjusting it for poverty. This would tell us which way the monies would move if we did that. We also do it based on food stamps, which is one of my favorite alternate measures of poverty, and then based on income inequality. Now, for those of you who aren't economists, there's this thing called the Gini coefficient and the Lorenz curve, and I'll quickly show you how it works. Here we have percentage of people along the bottom and percentage of income. 20%, the lowest 20%, the poorest 20% of the people in the country, they're only getting right here about 5% of the income. You go up, the poorest 40% are still only getting about 10% of the income. That's how the Lorenz curve works, the bottom part right there. What we wanted to do with this income inequality adjustment is take the bend out. So if you were getting disproportionately smaller share, for the states getting disproportionately smaller shares of income, we gave them disproportionately larger shares of funding allocation. Then we also look at a bunch of adjustments. You can see we've got a laundry list full of adjustments. These are cobbled together from things that we've seen in different state and federal funding formulas and things that people have talked about. So we wanted to look at all kinds of different ways that you can adjust how much money each county or each state is going to get. And you can see that there's different measures of wealth, different measures of local costs, some measures of income inequality, which, to be honest, a lot of people don't look at. Yet, but you'll see it behaves pretty nicely later on, so it's something that they might look at eventually. And then other things like ability to pay, which we'll also talk about a little bit more later. And let me give you one example. If we wanted to take current allocations and adjust that based on how poor you are in a given state, let's take four-state example. Take your current allocations. Let's say this state here, B, is getting 20%. If you look at how much their per capita income is in B, it's 22. It's the lowest of all the states. So they're basically the poorest state. So instead of just getting 22, we're going to adjust 20%. We're going to adjust them, and they're going to go up to 20%, 27% of total. In other words, we've adjusted their share of total allocations up because they were poor. So, and you can see we're going to do similar adjustments based on all of these other things, like ability to pay, your house values, and stuff like that. Once we've done all these adjustments, we're going to look at those models and those resulting allocations based on a number of different evaluations, and I'll talk about them momentarily. First and easiest is kind of the parking lot measure. Let's say you're all parked cars, or the meeting room measure. Let's say you're all parked cars. How much chaos is formed when I make 10% of you move? How much is 20% of you, and so forth? This is just a measure of how much money is moving. What we did for bioterrorism is the gray bars, this is odd, the gray bars represent the current allocations. The black line shows what would happen to those allocations if we went straight per capita. So you can see that the smaller states, or the states with lower populations, they don't get much, the black line, they don't get much in terms of straight per capita. But most of this height in the gray bar was from that 4 million, flat 4 million per state. So if we switch to straight per capita, then these states are going to lose the top part of that line, anything above it, which I have here is pink. So to get a measure of just how much chaos is formed or how much money moves, I just add up the pink and I divide it by the total gray, and that shows me the percentage of total funds that moved. If I expand this and then look at all the different other ways I was talking about changing, about allocating money based on poverty, food stamps, or income inequality in different colors, you can see that here in food stamps, for example, 17% of all money moved, and you can see the blue line is fairly erratic. It's got a low correlation to the current allocations, so it's subject to a lot of spread, meaning 17% of all money would move if we gave money instead of based on population, based on instead of the way it's done now in the gray bars, if we gave it instead based on food stamps. Now, I wanted to show you two little states because I like them because they're so close to each other, yet there's a lot of differences between them. Maryland and Tennessee, they both have a similar population, so you can see over here they'd wind up with a very similar share of total money. But if we gave it based on poverty, you can see how much higher Tennessee is than Maryland right there. Because Tennessee is poor, they get more money. The same story is told if you use food stamps. This is one of my favorite measures, and this is, again, going back to what we want this to be what we want this to be used for. We want this to be used basically for policy wonks who are working with state representatives and other state legislators and national people. We want them to be using this to see what funding formulas are going to be, what changes to funding formulas will be feasible, who's going to vote which way. What we do, the blue is more or less what we call our Senate index. This is percentage of states who are winners and losers. Let me go back a second. Here, all these small states down here with their pink, we know that these states were losers in terms of, they're not bad states, but they're going to lose money on this deal. And they're going to lose a fairly significant chunk of that money. So what we do is the blue represents the percentage of states, or the percentage of senators, since each state gets two, percentage of senators who are going to be against it. And the orange is based on percentage of population. And since representatives in the House are based on that, this is your House, this is your Senate index and your House index. Now, if we went and changed bioterrorism money to straight per capita, you'd have a few states that gained, going back a second, that's these states, the large states with larger population. These states gain money. They'll be happy. Unfortunately, look at all the pink. All these states will be unhappy. So you've got a few happy states over here, a lot of unhappy states over here. And what this graph shows you is same thing. A few happy states here, so a few happy senators, a lot of unhappy senators. In terms of evaluating whether or not they'll change this to a straight per capita, this kind of tells you it will never happen. There are just too many senators who are going to be opposed to it. It might pass the House, Because you can see, based on population, there was a lot of large states with their representatives, they'd be happy. So it might pass the House, but it will never pass the Senate. Looking at the same thing for some other ways that you might allocate money, and looking at how the looking at like behind the numbers, if you look at the poverty, you can see that it's divided based on poverty. There's an awful lot of, well, first, number of winners is about the same. So the amount of support you'll get from senators and congressmen is about the same. But the losers, the opposition to it is very different based on whether you give out money based on poverty or income inequality. By the way, the reason we're using income inequality is some people think that income inequality might be a better measure than poverty in terms of bad economic conditions. So income inequality inspired a lot less opposition than poverty. And the reason for that is if you graph poverty and income inequality and you have each state, and the size of the circle here is the size of the state in terms of population. If you look at this upper quadrant, they have low poverty over here, but high income inequality. So the low poverty over here, darn this mouse, this square here will lose. So there's a few states there. If you look at those with high income inequality over here in this quadrant that's not lined, notice that there's really no states in there. That's why there's fewer losers here, but there's more losers here based on that quadrant or, mouse is picky, that quadrant. We also do these things, we call them SEPAs, which stands for Change in Proportionality of Allocation. Let me talk through one. It's a little bit easier to explain. Let's say you wanted to give out all your money straight per capita. That's your black line right there. Percentage of population, percentage of money. So you have a nice 45-degree angle. This gray line buried in there is current allocation. It's a little bit bowed down, which shows you that current allocation is a little bit far from the quote-unquote ideal, hypothetical ideal, of straight proportionality. If we used the income inequality, divided the money based on income inequality instead, the green line, you can see that the green line is well inside the gray line. So in other words, the green line moves more towards perfect proportionality of allocation. And the reason for that, you can kind of see, as you explore the differences, you get to see. So it's not just the graph or the measure that we're doing, it's also the exploring the differences that we're going to try and bring to the discussion about formulas. The reason for this, the way these behave, the way these curves play out, is if you look at population here and per capita allocations for the different things, look at how tightly distributed the income inequality is. It's not that messy a thing, but the blue dots here and here, you see you've got small states with very low and very high per capita allocations, which shows more of a spread, which just means they're a lot further away from a straight per capita. We can also do it based on poverty. Same kind of idea, change in proportionality, but in this case, the hypothetical ideal is that this red line, you won't see when I point to it, the red line there, which is based on straight per person in poverty allocation. And again, one of the interesting things was the income inequality measure was one of the nicer alternatives in that it moved from the current allocation, which is really far bowed away from poverty, much more towards this. Now, one of the interesting things about this is the fact that the current allocation is more bowed means that if you believe that disasters affect poor people more strongly, then you do want money, BT money, going a bit more towards poorer states. And the degree of bow shows you that the current allocations are not very good in that regard. Finishing up with this whole rainbow of graphs and stuff like that. Now, you saw I had like 17 different adjustments, lots of different models and stuff like that. It's all chaos. We're looking at, basically we're trying to create a little toolbox for policy analysts and wonks. We're starting with an oversized toolbox. We know we have way too many tools in there. And we got to measure, we got to condense it down. This is where we're at now. We've got the big toolbox, but we want to condense it down so we can give people who do this work a small set of numbers. So we got to condense it down in a few different dimensions. This shows first four different funding formulas. We've been talking about BT, but now I'll show you pandemic influenza, block grants, and MCH down at the bottom. We're looking at a bunch of different funding formulas. We're also looking at a number of state funding formulas as well. but we don't have enough room on this graph. Some of the different ability to pay methods we were looking at was per capita. What's their per capita income? What's their EF map, which is more or less their local salary kind of stuff? Home values, taxable resources for the area. The idea goes that if counties have large, high home values, they're better capable of paying for their own public health. That's one of the theories, at least. So what we did is we wanted to, and then these are five of the different measures we're using. And I'm not going to bore you with details, but this is the logic we're going through. Look at the Hill profile. Look at these two, home values and total taxable resources. Notice that that one looks similar to that one. It's a nice V. This one looks similar to this one. That looks similar, and they look similar here. What that tells us is by all of these different ways that we can evaluate how money moves based on per capitas, based on percentage of money moves, and so forth, based on all the different ways we have of looking at movement of money, changing, basing your allocation, or adjusting your allocation for home values or total taxable resources is about the same. What this tells policy analysts is if you're doing one, you don't have to do the other. So what it does is, and I've seen some states try and get really elaborate funding formulas where they'll put in local home values, taxable resources, and they're saying, well, some places don't have many homes, but they got a lot of businesses, so we need taxable resources. This is saying it's not going to make much difference in the long run. So that's one thing that we're looking at that. And the other thing we're looking at is whether or not we need all these five different evaluation measures. And what we're doing is we're looking at the relationship of one to the other throughout the thing, and we won't bore you with the details on that. Finishing up, what we're trying to do is we're trying to say something about funding formulas. We're trying to give policy people and state representatives a tool with which to make some fairly objective measures to figure out whether or not money's moving where they want it to be moving. Towards that, we'll be hosting, Robert Wood Johnson at Academy Health will be hosting a meeting in late spring where we're going to be showing this to policy analysts. So if you've got anybody that you think would have input into this kind of stuff, like which directions we should go in, what they want in their toolbox, I'd be more than happy to get them there. Thank you. Go Phillies.
Thanks, Patrick, and the rest of the panelists. So we have time for questions, so if you do have a question, please raise your hand and identify yourself and speak loud. Yes.
Okay, the question is to describe a little bit more about the champions and for the strategic plan goals. In the beginning, it was assigned to a deputy director who happened to have an interest in that goal area. However, as we moved to including more staff, what was interesting is that they might have an expertise as a public health nurse working in maternal child health, but they wanted to be the champion for the emergency preparedness goal. So we didn't really see that typical expertise wanting to lead the goal, but there was another interest, and that made the work richer because it helped us cross those borders and boundaries across program areas and public health with all the silos. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, a question from Riverside on that last presentation on the changing formulas in terms of poverty or low income. How do you address those counties that are having significant dynamic changes in their population? Riverside, for example, is changing about 5% per year of its total population for the next 7 to 10 years. Will those formulas address that, or do you have to look at the changing demographics in your county on a year-to-year basis, and have you addressed that?
That's a very good question. We do plan on the other set of 50 slides that you haven't seen is we're doing these on time trends as well. So not only are we looking at these on a static basis, on a one-year basis, we're also looking at the time trends of these measures to see if, because let's face it, if we see one county kind of going down, like their share going down over time, that's a red flag. But yeah, we are looking at time trends as well.
On a short time basis, not just for 5 to 10 years, this would be almost on a yearly basis.
It would, put it this way, I don't know that, well, we're looking at trends, so we're looking at the annual change, the annual percentage change.
Well, partnerships have been defined by people who created the Nature survey, and it's a self-reported data, and it's a dichotomous variable whether you involve with having partners in particular sector or not. So, and there was no way for us to control for intensity of partnering or anything like that. We're working on that. We are. I mentioned that we are planning to look more at causal relationships, and the way we approach it is we're creating a panel data set, and probably we'll use more sophisticated statistical methods to do that. So by merging data from 96 with 05 and others.
Any questions? Yes, sir.
Richard Sewell from UIC School of Public Health in Chicago. I want to ask Dr. Sutch a couple of questions about the high per capita revenues for local health departments. Isn't that more a function of their heavy involvement perhaps in providing personal health services where they get third-party reimbursement? So the partnership with community health centers is sort of forced there because they're doing the same thing, or they might be the federally qualified health center.
Yeah, exactly. That's one of the reasons, for example, why Los Angeles County Health Department have budget bigger than the whole CDC. The same is for San Francisco and New York City. So it's definitely the case. We tried to adjust for it. Remember, we also included the number of services that they're providing as a kind of way to account for that, but I agree with you. We probably didn't account for all of these things. So there are a lot of explanations that need to be made.
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, I'm Nicole from the School of Public Health at the University of Michigan. Brad, I didn't get your email address on your first slide. Would you mind repeating it for me?
Yeah, sure. It's just brad.wright@unc.edu.
Oh, thank you. Easy enough.
Well, if no more questions, thank you for attending. The panelists will be up here for a few minutes. If you'd wish to come up and speak with them, feel free to. Thank you.
Gretchen, hi. I'm Maureen Hill. I just wanted to introduce myself.
Nice to meet you.
Met
three people that I've just seen email
addresses. Yeah, you want to put a face with, right?
You
as well. I was so excited to see a Wisconsin person as the top dog here.
Oh, well, hey, it was nice to kind of get connected, and there's a lot of good stuff to go to. And
my research interest is in emergency preparedness and that kind of thing. And so there was a session right now that I was like, okay, well, I'm going to just send them an email and say I wasn't there and send me stuff.
Yeah, I think the APHA is going to have a lot of the stuff online too.
Oh, sure.
So I think after a while,
So tomorrow should go pretty much like this. Did you get bios from your people?
Yes,
or
I emailed my people. But you know, get here early and just ask them how they want to be introduced.
And that's what I've done in my previous life doing that.
I did mine very last minute because I was like,
they have one they can just click on.
I went to community board.
Good.
Yeah, I stayed for the whole week.
You know, I came in yesterday and I'm leaving on Wednesday.
Actually, I'm teaching two grad classes, a healthcare admin class on Wednesday night.
That class got canceled. They were so disappointed.
Yeah, they were not disappointed, let me tell you. They were like, oh, take another day.
Yeah, that's where I'm going. So what I showed is not just like a little exercise for what I really want to do. And the way I've decided to look at it, and I haven't quite figured out how to do that because they're kind of down on the field.
I wanted to do for 5 hours.
I wanted to do a community competence side of the scope of volume of enabling services and percent of uncompetent care and things like that. The show community orientation. And then a few financial.
That's the one, like a mission versus margin mindset.
And it's precisely because the healthcare system has changed so much. I know, Chapel Hill, Carborough, Piedmont.
I grew up in a suburb of what is now
$1 million a year budget. Really interesting is there's just not a lot of scientific basis for how it works. I mean,